This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring, and I need to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. Now, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls, because we have with us Lori Milroy, and she's written a book. It's called Attack on America. Of course, it was called A Study in Revenge before. It was it's been rebrought back, but it's a book that is so apropos for today, because it goes into the history of the terrorist activities in New York City, specifically the first bombing of the World Trade Center. And because the American people were never allowed to know what really happened there, why, of course, we had the second bombing of the World Trade Center. So, Lori, thank you so very much for being with us.
Oh, good to be with you, Stan.
Now, you have, of course, studied this for a long time, and you had the opportunity to go through a lot of the records and files and talk to the FBI agents who investigated the first World Trade Center bombing, which was in February of 1993. Now, why don't you go ahead and give the background of that bombing? Because we have to understand that to understand what happened September 11th last year.
Absolutely. The bombing of the World Trade Center in February of 1993 is the beginning of this all. And that bomb was meant to topple one tower onto the other. And New York FBI believed that Iraq was behind the attack, that Iraqi intelligence had worked with and hidden behind Islamic militants. Clinton didn't want to hear that. If you remember back in 1993, Clinton came in with a very big domestic agenda. The thing is, actually, Saddam had a campaign of revenge then. He also tried to kill former President Bush. And Clinton, in June of 1993, a few months after the Trade Center bombing, attacked Iraqi intelligence headquarters with cruise missiles. And he said publicly that that was for the attempt to kill former President Bush, but he also meant it for the Trade Center bombing, too, if New York FBI was right in its suspicion.
All right, fine. Now, of course, there was a man named Ramzi Yousef who came to America. He was a Baluchi. He was from Baluchistan, at least that's what we think. And he, of course, was instrumental in helping to build the bomb and planning where it would be set. And then, of course, he left the United States that evening. But it was very significant of the fact that he came in with a passport of Ramzi Yousef. He left on somebody else's passport, and that was sort of the key that the FBI used to figure that this had to be an Iraqi agent. What was that all about?
You're right. Ramzi Yousef came into the United States in September of 92 on an Iraqi passport in the name of Ramzi Yousef. He fled the night of the Trade Center bombing on a Pakistani passport in the name of Abdelbaset Karim. And there really was an individual, Abdelbaset Karim, born and raised in Kuwait. And as a routine matter, the Kuwaitis maintained an Interior Ministry file on him. He's an alien resident. And that file in Kuwait was tampered with create a false identity for Ramzi Yousef. Among other things, Ramzi Yousef's fingerprints were put into that file. And the only party that reasonably could have done so was Iraq while it occupied Kuwait.
In other words, somebody had gone to a lot of trouble to create a false identity for Ramzi Yousef as this fellow Abdul Kamar. In other words, somebody had to go into his records in Kuwait and substitute his fingerprints for the original individual. So obviously, whoever is behind this is a very, very sophisticated intelligence organization.
That's right. And one of the well-known practices of Soviet-style intelligence agencies like Iraq's is to create a false identity for key agents of theirs involved in so-called wet operations.
Now, I think that the most significant thing, and what they never tell the American people, is that, you know, you don't have a bunch of terrorists who sit around and say, hey, we want to be terrorists, you know. You have to have some sort of a country behind them to provide them havens, to provide them with false identities, to provide them with the funding. It takes a lot of money to stage a terrorist attack. This is not something you do, you know, with the money you make at the 7-Eleven. And yet, that is constantly played down in this country. Do you have that feeling that they don't want, of course, to say, look, somebody's putting up money, somebody is providing a lot of intelligence, a lot of training. These are not just sort of backyard terrorists, you know, like John Reed, the shoe bomber. These are very sophisticated operations.
You're absolutely right. Prior to the Trade Center bombing back in 1993, 1 month into Clinton's first term in office, we believed that major terrorist attacks against the United States were state-sponsored. It's the Clinton administration, the Trade Center bombing, starting with the Trade Center bombing, that changes that completely. The Clinton administration says that starting with the Trade Center bombing back in 93, the whole nature of terrorism changed. The terrorist states are no longer involved, but individuals or loose networks, the most, you know, recent form of which is Al-Qaeda. And the bureaucracies that deal with terrorism, like the CIA, understood Clinton didn't want to hear that Iraq was involved, and they accommodated that. And that's what led to 9/11, and now they don't want to see any Iraqi link to 9/11 either.
All right. Well, certainly there was some organization that was behind what happened on September 11th. And, you know, certainly, really, it could have been so much worse. There were, I think, 6 people killed and 1,000 injured and, what, $250 million worth of damage. But if this had gone the way that Ramzi Yousef had actually planned, and he actually bragged about the fact that he anticipated that one of the Twin Towers would be toppled on the other and 250,000 Americans would die. And yet, of course, he escaped. And, of course, they arrested a couple local, not very, very smart Arabs there. And one of them was so dumb. And I hate to say, I mean, you know, Arabs are usually very, very clever people. But this guy is so dumb. He actually, you know, rented the Ryder truck. And then, you know, he went back to get the rental deposit on this after it had been used to blow up the building. He claimed to have been stolen, and he wanted to get his money back. Now, you got to be pretty dumb to do something like that.
That's right. You're speaking about Mohammed Salama, arrested as he goes back for his deposit on the van that had carried the bomb. And that's that was one of the factors that caused New York FBI, its head, Jim Fox, to believe that there was much more to the attack. The ease of the arrest, Fox, suggested a conspiracy masterminded by others.
In other words, these people were set up. In other words, they were involved. It isn't to say they weren't involved, but they were simply the front people who were left there to be caught, to take the pressure and the focus off of the real terrorists. And doesn't one of those people go back to Iraq and still stay there today?
Absolutely. There is one indicted fugitive from the 93 Trade Center bombing. He is an Iraqi. His name is Abdulrahman Yassin. He came from Baghdad before the bombing. He returned to Baghdad after the bombing. Last spring, 60 Minutes interviewed him in Baghdad. How come we never hear about this?
We're going to have to interrupt you there. And this is the time, of course, when I want to mention to our listeners that some of the items we carry here at Radio Liberty, certainly the people who make Alamax, which is the active ingredient in garlic, we think it's a very excellent product because garlic lowers your blood pressure, it lowers your cholesterol, and seems to help as far as your immune system is concerned. At least studies have shown that people who take a product known as Alamax, which is the active ingredient in garlic, it's allicin, actually have far fewer colds. Call 866-405-4000. That's 866-405-4000. And then, of course, if you run down and you feel tired all the time, you really ought to consider getting some Be Alive Royal Jelly. You can get that by calling 866-233-7500. That's 866-233-7500. I've taken it myself for about 10 years. I certainly think it works very well. So give it a try. If you feel run down, it's sold with a money-back guarantee. That's Be Alive Royal Jelly, 866-233-7500. Well, if there's any one tape that you should hear, it's my talk on geopolitics, an untold story that is vitally important if America is to survive as a free nation. It goes into the background of the forces that have created the wars of the 20th century, the Boer War, the First World War, the Second World War, Korea, Vietnam. We go into the ideological and the spiritual battle behind the forces that have moved America from crisis to crisis and are currently undermining the very fabric of our society. That number again, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and the tape, Geopolitics. It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of my talk on geopolitics. Okay, Dr. Stan back here, and of course our guest is Lori Milroy. Her book, now it's Attack on America, isn't it, the latest title?
The War Against America, the war Donald Fain in the World Trade Center attack.
The War Against America, and where can people get that?
They can get it at the bookstores or at Amazon.
Okay, that's The War Against America. And if you have a difficulty, you can always give us a call, and we'll give you some suggestions. Anyway, of course, we're talking about this man, Ramzi Yosef, because he's really a very, very key figure. And so Ramzi, of course, leaves New York on the evening of the bombing in February of 1993, and he goes off of Pakistan and Baluchistan, and then suddenly he appears in the Philippines. When did he get into the Philippines?
The first that we know of his being in the Philippines is September of 1994, and he goes there because he's planning to bomb a dozen U.S. airplanes.
All right, fine. And, of course, he now is a master bomb maker. Somebody's taught him how to make the bombs. I mean, he can make a bomb, you know, just that'll go off almost any place using a wristwatch. In fact, he does build a bomb, doesn't he, and blows a hole in some sort of a airliner, and some poor Japanese fellow sitting on the seat gets sucked out?
Absolutely. As a test of his bombs for the U.S. planes, in December of 1994, Yosef bombs a Philippines Airways plane that's flying from the Philippines to Tokyo. The bomb goes off. One passenger, in fact, sucks through a hole, and the plane manages to make an emergency landing in Okinawa.
All right, fine. So then, of course, he's going to build bombs. And how many airliners is he going to take down almost at one time?
The plan was to bomb a dozen U.S. airplanes in 48 hours flying over the Pacific.
All right, fine. And he was going to make these bombs and get them onto all of them. He was going to take, he and his associates were going to take short flights, and then, of course, they'd get off the plane would continue on, and then out over the ocean it would go up. But there was another component to this operation, wasn't there? What about the plan to attack the CIA, to hijack planes and attack the CIA?
I don't think that was a real part of the plot. The plot was to bomb a dozen U.S. airplanes. The thing is, you know, Yosef started a fire while he was mixing explosives in his kitchen sink, and he has to flee because the Filipino firemen come and then the policemen. And the policemen arrest a conspirator who's with Yosef, a guy by the name of Abdul Hakim Murad. And Murad was a pilot, and they torture him. And under torture, he said, you know, there was a plan to attack the CIA, drive a plane into it. But I'm not convinced that is true. I think that he only said that in order to ease the pain. That's one of the problems with torturing people. The answers you get may not be truthful.
But that's exactly what happened, you know, just about a few years later. So actually 6 years later, that's exactly what happened. They hijacked a plane and crashed it into the building. Would that influence your thought that maybe it wasn't true what he said?
No, because people did not understand it in the fashion that he spoke about it. What people thought was of a small plane driven by one person crashing into the CIA, not of a hijacking a passenger plane and using the fuel on a westbound, you know, a flight from the East Coast to the West Coast, all that fuel then became the explosive.
Well,
that was not what Murad conveyed at all.
Right, of course. But, you know, there had been talk of that, certainly within terrorist circles before that, hadn't there? And even after that, weren't there some certain studies that suggested that they were actually contemplate this, as suicide flights, using the fuel to explode and destroy the buildings?
I think Tom Clancy came up with the idea.
Okay, fine. Well, actually, so let's get on with the story of what happened then. Of course, Ramzi Yousef escapes from the Philippines, and where does he go then? Of course, he gets away. Murad is captured, along with a laptop computer.
Right. The police in the Philippines seize Yousef's computer because they have to flee very quickly, and eventually the FBI, you know, can decrypt it, and they're among the things on the computer are names. They're also the plans on the computer. That's how people, you know, how U.S. authorities know something so much about what that plot is, because the plot is there on the computer. There are also names and addresses.
I see. What about Operation, was this Operation Bajinka?
Right. The name for this plot to bomb a dozen U.S. airplanes was Operation Bajinka. One of the strange things, that's a Serbo-Croatian word. Now, where did Yousef pick that up? Who knows? In any event, he flees to Islamabad, where he contacts someone whom U.S. authorities have contacted from the list, and U.S. authorities force that person to turn in Yousef.
All right, fine. And so Yousef then is captured, actually. He's in Pakistan someplace, and he's picked up and brought back to the United States. And he's tried then twice. He's tried in, what, 1997?
Right. He's actually, in 96, he's tried for the plane bombing plot, and then the next year he's tried for the World Trade Center bombing. In each case, he is given a life sentence.
Well, so why give him two life sentences? It seemed to be it'd save an awful lot of money if you just gave him one life sentence without the possibility of parole.
Well, that's what he has, but it was the Clinton administration's attitude towards terrorism, that you deal with terrorism as a law enforcement issue, and you keep trying these people.
But, of course, you never get to the real people who are behind this whole thing. In other words, who's really funding this? What you do is you use these people, and then, of course, you say, well, it's all taken care of, but it isn't taken care of at all, because the people behind Ramzi Yousef providing the money and the training, you know, and the help for him and part of the network are never uncovered.
That's right. That's exactly what happened. Because every time, you know, under the Clinton administration, there were more arrests and convictions of terrorist perpetrators than under any other administration in this country's history, but it did nothing to stop the terrorism.
Well, now, of course, there was the story we've all heard about the terrorists in New York City, and they were thinking of blowing up the Harlem Tunnel and a couple of other buildings over there, UN, and... But really, wasn't that all being incited by an FBI agent provocateur who had infiltrated and was getting big bucks to try to incite these Arabs into committing acts of terrorism? This was after the World Trade Center bombing.
Well, right. That's another thing that's misunderstood. There's a World Trade Center bombing in February of 93. It's followed by an FBI undercover plot.
Really a sting operation, wasn't it, sort of?
Yeah. That's exactly what it is. They have an informant who's an Egyptian. He goes around, you know, proposing jihad. Let's make jihad.
Let's go ahead and start blowing up all these things. And some of these people are not smart enough, and they get sort of swept up in it.
Oh, they get swept up in it. Furthermore, it turns out a Sudanese emigre picks up the bait to make jihad. His first target is an armory in Manhattan. But he has two, quote, friends at Sudan's UN mission. They're intelligence agents. And they start shifting the targets. They say, I'll blow up the UN. I'll blow up the FBI building in New York. And then two tunnels. They keep adding more targets. It's just like these people are living idiots.
And then, but basically, the people who are telling them to do this are actually intelligence agents?
That's right. See, we focus on the blithering idiots and ignore the intelligence agents.
Well, of course, this whole thing was, of course, used, you know, to get the blind sheik, Now, the blind sheik was certainly involved with trying to overthrow the government in Egypt. He was a part of the Muslim Brotherhood, and he was a leader of this whole international terrorist movement, if you want to call it that. Some people would call it a patriotic movement to try to get overthrow the governments that we have put in positions. But he was primarily interested in overthrowing the government of Egypt. So why did we bring him over to this country? That made any sense.
Well, he was on a terrorism watch list. He was not supposed to be in the U.S., but somehow he was. In fact, he had a green card. Lord knows why.
Well, of course, some people believe the CIA gave it to him. There's a book called Unholy Wars written by James Cooley that suggests the CIA brought him into this country. Is there any truth to that, do you think?
I don't think so, but I don't know. It certainly was a huge blunder.
Right.
But the public only became aware of it. People only became aware of it after the World Trade Center bombing. Because Sheikh Omar, who's a publicity hound, then got a lot of interviews. So after the arrests in the second bombing plot for, you know, the UN and the Federal Building and the tunnels, after those arrests, when Sheikh Omar wasn't arrested then, the politicians in New York cried for the head of Sheikh Omar. A judge had already ordered him deported, but that wasn't enough for the politicians. They wanted him to be arrested.
But on what grounds? He has he advocated any of the violence here in the United States?
Well, he on an abstract level, the answer is yes. I mean, he does call for jihad against the United States. But when Emad Salem, the informant, went to him and said, you know, can we blow up the UN? Sheikh Omar said, well, it's a legitimate target. It's illegal for Muslims, but it's a bad idea. So he didn't really tell him to do it. And in any case, what gets lost in all of this, because, you know, he's charged with seditious conspiracy, i.e., you know, inciting these attacks, which you can even say, okay, he did, fine. But what got lost in it was the involvement of states in these plots. And furthermore, I think Sudan was fronting for Iraq.
Well, let's wait, and we'll get to this in just a moment. But this is the time I certainly want to mention to our listeners that we carry something called the Miracle 2 soap products, and we can't make any medical claims on them. But I will tell you that many of the people who use them certainly have told us some wonderful stories of how they've helped with various things that they've had, various problems. So if you'd like to try them, all we can do is suggest that you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the Miracle 2 soap products, an introductory offer. And, of course, it's a soap and a moisturizing soap and a lotion and a gel and a neutralizer. And some people say the neutralizer helps with heartburn. It's a very alkaline solution. Give it a try. That's Miracle 2 soap products. I can tell you that an awful lot of people have tried them, and they're very, very pleased. And then, of course, if you have children in government schools, seriously consider getting a Monopoly set. It's played like Monopoly. It's a board game, but of course in 16 to 20 hours you can begin to reprogram mind, even of an adult, to begin to think phonetically, to read phonetically, to spell phonetically, to pronounce words phonetically. And of course that's Phonopoly, and of course it's 7 board games, and it's 2 books we throw in, and it's $139.95. And of course, if you have a child in government schools or has never been taught phonics, what a wonderful, wonderful gift for them. And then, of course, if you have children in government schools, you need to get them out, and you need to get them onto the Robinson homeschool curriculum. And for $199.95, well, it'll take you all the way from grammar school through high school graduation. And, of course, all the texts are there. The only thing you have to buy separate are the math textbooks. Call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV. War. Our 14th set on the JFK assassination includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I did, but it is an interview, and you'll actually hear Lee Harvey Oswald talking before the time of the assassination. a two-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of an American president, and then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out, and if you listen to this four-tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the JFK assassination tapes. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course we're talking about history, and as George Santayana said, those who do not remember history are condemned to repeat it. So we have the blind Sikh, and of course Sikh, you know, he is here. He's certainly is intent upon overthrowing the government in Egypt, and yet he's allowed as a known terrorist on the terrorist watch list. He's given a green card to come to America. And if you read the James Cooley's book, time and again he's in prison in Egypt, and there's almost an invisible force, and he's always getting out, and then he comes to the United States, which really doesn't quite make sense. And then of course, the agent provocateurs are out there trying to, of course, whip up this furor within the Islamic radicals there, and some of them even agree to go ahead and build a bomb. And what are they going to do, blow up the Harlem Tunnel or something?
First target was the United Nations,
okay.
Then New York's Federal Building, and then the Holland and Lincoln Tunnels.
Okay, fine. So basically, of course, the FBI's got to look pretty good because now they, you know, we've already had the bombing of the World Trade Center, the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center. So with the agent provocateur there, of course, they get some of the Arabs to agree to go ahead and build a bomb, and then, of course, they arrest them. Is that right?
That's right. These people are arrested early on the morning of June 24, mixing what they believe are explosives. Of course, they're not really explosives.
Okay, fine. So they're really not. This whole thing, they've been tricked into it. This doesn't excuse them in any way. I mean, I'm sure that they would have built the bomb if they had been able to. But they have been told, their people within their midst were actually, of course, agent provocateurs trying to get them to commit the crime. And of course, now they'll spend the rest of their life in prison. Well, and maybe society is a better place when you have people like that. You can't have them running around on the streets, but, you know, you really shouldn't have people out there inciting to commit these terrible, terrible crimes.
Well, but forget the... Because we focused on individuals, the Clinton administration did, we ignored states.
Right.
Iraq, Sudan. You can arrest all those people, you know, you can arrest them all, and it will not stop Saddam from attacking us.
Of course, it won't stop whoever the state that is that's behind this. Now, you at one time were actually a consultant for the Clinton administration, weren't you, during the initial campaign there in 1992?
That's right. I was advisor to... on Iraq, to Clinton in the 92 campaign. At that point, he was tougher than former President Bush on Saddam. Clinton said that Bush should have got rid of Saddam during the Gulf War. And I briefed Clinton, and it went well. And I was stunned. No sooner did he become president than he reversed his policy completely.
Well, I remember, of course, when Bill Clinton was very unhappy with the Bush administration because of the way they were treating the communist China and because of their attitude towards Tiananmen Square, and he accused Bush, in essence, of being soft on the Chinese communists, and then as soon as Clinton got into office, he did exactly what George Bush had been doing before, and the same thing, you know, criticizing Bush for being soft on the terrorists, and then he does exactly the same thing. So it really didn't make much difference of whether you had the Bush there or the Clintons there. Neither one of them was going to do much, were they?
Oh, I think what Clinton did is beyond the pale. I know Washington politics are sleazy, but Clinton had this notion that you could spin national security affairs, i.e., you know, manage the public perception, i.e., lie about them.
You mean he made the corruption really look bad?
Yeah. He exploited a situation that exists in Washington where people go along to get along, do what the boss wants, and it led to the death of 3,000 Americans on September 11th.
Okay, fine. And, of course, the American people have never heard this story, that somebody was behind this, some organization was behind this. Now, why are you convinced it was Saddam Hussein? Certainly, it's because they changed the fingerprints in the Kuwaiti the consulate or whoever it was monitoring this gentleman to give him Ramzi Yousef's fingerprints. And certainly one of the terrorists who was involved in the World Trade Center bombing is still being given asylum there in Iraq. What were some of the other things that convinced you that Saddam is behind this whole thing?
Well, just remember that the Gulf War didn't end. The view back in 93, the Gulf War was not a distant memory. This is what New York FBI believed. The nature of the huge bomb left a crater five stories deep in the basement floors of the Trade Center. These people obviously left behind by someone else. There's only a limited number of possible, you know, parties that are suspects for that.
And
one, of course, is Saddam.
Right. Somebody's got to have a lot of technical know-how. This whole thing was carefully planned, and they simply threw the local Islamic people to the wolves. They were to be left overthrown in prison where the real professionals got away. Was that it?
That's right. It's called a false flag operation. For example, you know, many people say that the Soviets were behind the attempt to assassinate the Pope in 1981. The person who really did it was a right-wing Turk. There are people, and they're probably right, to say the Soviets were behind it. If they're right, it's called a false flag operation.
In other words, you get somebody else to do your dirty work.
Right. Exactly. And Saddam did it over and over and over again, and Clinton just kept holding trials of these relatively minor figures.
But, of course, was Saddam involved with the bombing of our barracks at Riyadh or in the Khobar Towers or in the bombing of our embassies in Kenya and certainly in Tanzania in 1998 or the coal? Or weren't these all separate items, or were these tied to some other terrorist organization, some other country, or do you think they were tied back to Iraq as well?
I think they were Iraq as well. Remember the bombing at Al-Khobar. Those pilots who were killed at Al-Khobar, their job was to enforce the no-fly zone over southern Iraq. I recently met with a freshman congressman who had read The War Against America, and he was very nice to me, and among other things he said that he hadn't known what the U.S. Air Force personnel at Al-Khobar were doing, enforcing the no-fly zone in southern Iraq. Why would you blame anyone but Saddam for that?
All right, fine. And certainly is a very, very, very convincing sort of argument. So, but what about, the attack on the American forces in Somalia in 1994? Do you think he was involved in that in some way? Or what about the relationship between Osama bin Laden and Saddam?
Argument of the book that Iraqi intelligence and al-Qaeda work together. Al-Qaeda provides the foot soldiers, the cover, the ideology. Iraqi intelligence provides the direction, training, and expertise.
Well, now what about the Iranian intelligence or the Saudi or the Pakistani intelligence? Are they at all involved in this? Is this more than one country working in this direction?
Not if you're talking about the attacks on the United States in the 1990s. Iran attacked the United States in the 1980s, right after the Iranian Revolution and all the time that Khomeini was alive, but Khomeini died over a decade ago. Iran is attacking the Israelis. The Syrians used to attack the United States. They haven't since the collapse of the Soviet Union.
All right, fine. So you feel that, of course, Saddam then is totally behind this whole thing, and of course, we then would be very justified in taking him out. Now, you, of course, had an opportunity to meet with Paul Wolfowitz when you were writing this book. What was it about? When did you actually write the book?
The book was written actually in 1994. I had a difficult time getting it published because the publisher said, book is well written, it makes a case against Saddam, but there is no market for this book. There's no market for a book on Iraq because Iraq is not news. and there's no, get this one, there's no market for a book on the Trade Center bombing because only 6 people died. So I thought, this is crazy. You know, how many people have to die before you can get a book published? And so I did briefings in Washington. This was 1995, and among the people I briefed to show, you know, what had happened, I took the key evidence, I put it on slides, I briefed Paul Wolfowitz, who was then dean of a university here. And he was very impressed by it and was very helpful in the end in my getting the book published. Of course, now he is Deputy Secretary of Defense, and his support for the book has a lot to do with why we're going to war with Iraq.
In fact, my understanding is he was very much been in favor of going to Iraq, a war with Iraq, even, you know, before George Bush was elected to the presidency.
Yes, and I think part of the reason that he felt we should do that is because he understood that Saddam had begun attacking the United States in 1993 with the World Trade Center bombing.
Well, now, why is this never brought out by the Bush administration? Certainly Paul Wolfowitz was there. Dick Cheney was at the American Enterprise Institute. Why aren't they bringing this out? Why aren't they dramatizing the story that you tell?
It's a very good question. The answer, to the best that I can understand it, the bureaucracies that are responsible for the deaths of 3,000 Americans on 2 hours on 9/11, that's the CIA and the FBI, will not take responsibility for that. They are not interested in pursuing the information that suggests an Iraqi link to 9/11. When information does arise, like the Czech reports, by Czech officials from the Czech Republic that Mohammed Atta, the leader of the hijackers in the United States, met with an Iraqi intelligence official in Prague a few months before 9/11. That's what the Czech officials said. The CIA worked very hard to undermine and dismiss that information. You don't hear it anymore. And Bush, the president, really should hold these people responsible. They undercut his policy. But he has a good relation with George Tenet. They like one another. And so these people are not held accountable. They are allowed to continue doing this, and the chances are therefore much higher that something terrible will happen again.
Well, I fear that we certainly are not doing what we should be doing at all, and it seems that everybody in Washington, D.C. Doesn't want to take a stand, or if they do take a stand and it goes against official policy, they're going to lose their job, their pension, and so don't you think there's an awful tendency in Washington, D.C. just to go along and get along, and anybody who stands up and tries to do what's right can be assured he'll be stomped on?
Well, that's what happened to me, Stan. That's right. Paul Wolfowitz is an unusual kind of person, and he was willing to take a stand. But most of the people who work, you know, in the CIA on this issue, they are protecting their rear ends. If the public could ever understand what had happened, they might be very angry. If this had been done by the private sector, there could be criminal penalties. Reckless endangerment, it would be called, or criminal negligence. The whole idea that Saddam is involved in attacking the United States, hiding behind Islamic militants, and everyone pretends they don't know?
Well, we're going to have to take a quick break here. When we get back, we'll welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But right now, of course, we want to remind all of you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we hope that many of you will decide right now you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours a day, and we're really dependent upon those of you out in the listening audience for your help. And if you possibly can, we hope that you'll join the Radio Liberty for a suggested a gift of $20 a month or more. Now, if you can't afford that, if you'd like to just subscribe to our newsletter, it's $25 a year, and you get our monthly newsletter. And, of course, you do that by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will go to our website at radioliberty.com, and you can pull down our radio programs, our live programs 3 hours a day, and the other 2 hours we do, one on the American Freedom Network, one on the Genesis Network. They're all up. Then there should be links to those. Those are not archived, and my three programs, this and the two later programs today, are archived. Tell other people about our website. Tell them about certainly our newsletter. Tell them about our radio programs. Get them started to listen, because this is how we're going to be able to reach people all across America. So again, remember our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And feel free, of course, to duplicate any of our radio programs, any of our videos, anything we've actually produced. We want you to get that out. And specifically, I believe our newsletters, which are posted up on the web, or you may actually have copies. Don't feel embarrassed to copy them. And, of course, call right now. A very important book is called AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working with an organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working with an organized medicine both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and we've got Bart calling from Carmel. Hi, Bart. How are you doing?
Good afternoon, sir, and thank you for allowing me to call your program. This is Milroy. I am in complete agreement with you that the deaths of these 3,000 people are on the hands of this government. It is the only conclusion one can arrive at when one begins to ask the horrendously important but as yet unanswered questions about this event that the media will not address. A short list of these vitally important questions that the media will not touch are, for example, why was George Bush and his staff on Cipro the day of the attack? Why was Mayor Willie Brown of San Francisco warned ahead of time not to fly that day? Why, for example, when Payne Stewart, the professional golfer, his jet went out of control, from the moment it became officially recognized that his jet went out of control to the moment he had fighter escorts, the amount of time that elapsed was 17 minutes, yet these hijacked jets were permitted to fly around for well over an hour in one of the most populous and highly secured regions in the country, which can only mean that the fighter jets were deliberately told to stand down. And there is a much longer list of these type of questions that the media will not address but are horrendously important, and they point to the simple fact that the government wanted this attack to occur, which I personally believe. And it's also important to understand that this attack on this war that is about to occur on Iraq would not be possible without this event occurring.
Well, let's get Lori's response to what you're saying. What's your response to what Bart is saying?
Well, I haven't heard of those things. It's a different perspective than mine. I really think that Clinton's responsible and the bureaucracies that accommodated him. And that this war is coming about because, you know, there's unfinished business from 1991. Saddam is still attacking us, and I urge Bart to take a look at my book and see how that fits in.
Now, do you think that the Bush administration has done everything it could to address this terrorist threat since the 9/11 attack?
Bush has done some things right. He's, you know, Al-Qaeda is part of it. And so is Iraq. He's going after Iraq, but, as I say, without really entirely explaining why, and that leaves us vulnerable. He should be telling us, providing civil defense measures.
Mrs. Milroy, I observe such important facts that the media overlooks, such as Grandfather Prescott Bush was arrested 3 times for supporting the Nazis through his financial house, Brown Brothers Harriman, and Mr. Bush himself eats off Nazi silverware in the Skull and Bones Club, which is not really a club at all, but a center of power in the world for the power brokers. And if he were a genuine Christian, of course he would denounce this. He doesn't. So I have many, many questions, but I will clear the line now and let somebody else call in.
All right. Thank you so much, Bart. Okay, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, Lori, the question is, you know, if Iraq was really behind this, then why did we attack Afghanistan? You know, if Iraq was the real culprit here, why did we go to war with Afghanistan?
Well, Al-Qaeda is involved, and Al-Qaeda people can carry out attacks, so it is a good thing to put them in a position where they can't. However, there are people, myself included, who would have preferred that we go to war with Iraq first.
All right, fine. So that's a very legitimate answer to the question. And, of course, if you're out there and you have a question for Lori Milroy, and, of course, her book is The War Against America. That's The War Against America. And our guest, of course, is Lori Milroy. And the book, of course, was it was originally titled The Study in Revenge, wasn't it?
Right. When it was published in hardback in the fall of 2000, it was called Study of Revenge, Saddam Hussein's Unfinished War Against America. And after 9/11, HarperCollins bought the paperback rights and we updated it and it was retitled.
And, of course, it has a foreword by a former director of the Central Intelligence Agency, James Woolsey, and he certainly tends to agree with your contention that Iraq was involved in the initial Trade Center bombing. How does he feel about the Iraq bombing in the second attack on the World Trade Center? Have you had a chance to talk to him about that?
Indeed I have, and Jim Woolsey is one of those who believes that Iraq was involved in 9/11. In fact, many people do. Bob Woodward in his book discusses this. But the administration just doesn't make it part of its public case for going to war because, as I've suggested, the bureaucracies that made the mistakes that led to 9/11 refuse to see what is before their eyes.
Well, now, are you speaking of Bob Woodward's latest book, Bush at War?
Yeah, that book, various parts of the book describe how various figures in the administration, Cheney, Rumsfeld, say that, you know, they believe Iraq is involved. Bush says, you know, it seems a lot of people think Iraq is involved. He doesn't want to fight two-front war, and he wants to take care of Afghanistan first and then do Iraq.
But if Iraq was the real culprit, you know, it doesn't seem quite right we should go into war with Afghanistan. We should have gone directly to war with Iraq, if indeed this contention is right, if they really believe that. And, of course, a lot of people are going to say, look, we went after Afghanistan because we wanted to build a pipeline across there for UNICAL, and that's why we put Karzai in. He's a UNICAL consultant. And is there any truth to that or not, do you think?
No, it really is. Al-Qaeda is involved. The Al-Qaeda people constitute the dupes that are used in these plots. And a dupe, for example, it doesn't take anything to drop a pound of anthrax into a subway. So it's a good thing to get the people who might be involved in these plots off the streets, to deny them the territory of Afghanistan, to use as a base for plotting. But Iraq is also involved. They're both involved.
Well, of course, you know, if we were really going to, of course, stop the people from doing what you're describing, the first thing we'd do would be to seal our borders. We're not making any effort at all to seal our borders. And we know that certainly people are coming in from the Middle East across our porous borders. They don't have to fly into New York. They just simply come across the border and we're not trying to stop them. I don't understand why, of course, we are building a great fence. I don't know how many 100 miles long across between Pakistan and Afghanistan to stop the terrorists from going across the border there, but we won't do the same thing here in the United States. That doesn't quite make sense if we're really serious about stopping these terrorists. And I agree with you. Certainly, the last thing we would want would be to have some of these terrorists with these weapons of mass destruction. I'm concerned that there is a possibility that if we strike at Saddam Hussein, he is going to retaliate against this country with every bit he has. He's got nothing to lose because he's going to die, and he's just of that temperament where I think he'd like to go out in a blaze of glory. And we know that they're building a shelter for Dick Cheney. We have the articles that several people have reported all the explosions there close to where he's living. Obviously, they're making some sort of an underground shelter for him. But, you know, they're certainly not doing anything to protect the American people.
Well, you're right, Stan. A lot more should be done, and I find it very frustrating and very dismaying. I think part of the reason why more isn't done is because if Bush were to tell the public what the dangers are, what precautions we should be taking, the civil defense measures, make smallpox vaccinations available to people, they would be scared off. And the only way you could maintain public support for war in that circumstances is to explain what happened on 9/11 the way I do and say that Saddam will attack us whether we do anything more to him or not. If we don't get rid of him, he will likely use biological agents against us. If we do get rid of him, it's the same thing. But if you tell the public, hey, Iraq was involved in 9/11, that's why we're doing this and taking all these risks, and this is the things you have to do to protect yourself, there'll be more understanding. And that's why I find so appalling that the bureaucracies can still sit on this information.
Well, I think what is really frightening is that the American people are not getting the truth. And, of course, as Santayana, George Santayana said, those who not remember the past are condemned to repeat it. We have to know the history of what's happened in the past to understand what's going on today. Well, we're just about out of time. Do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners?
Well, that we have to go to war with Iraq. It's going to be for a period of dangerous times as we do that, and we should do it as quickly as possible. That's one way of minimizing the danger.
But of course, if we do go to war with Iraq, and Saddam Hussein has nothing to lose, he is going to launch an attack on America if he possibly can.
So we should do it as soon as possible. See, but if we don't get rid of him, he will also attack us.
All right, fine. Well, thank you so very much. Again, our guest has been Lori Milroy, and of course, The War Against America is the title of the book, and it's available at the bookstores across America and Amazon.com. Thank you so much for being with us, Lori.
My pleasure, Stan. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. That was Lori Milroy, and of course, I wanted you to hear what she has to say because she's a fascinating individual. She's on the front lines of this back in Washington, D.C. Now, not necessarily in agreement that we should go to war with Saddam Hussein, because I don't think he's ever going to attack us, because if he knows if he did, why we would retaliate and just blot Iraq off the face of the earth with nuclear weapons. So, I believe we are laying ourselves open for some very difficult times. I believe that they are preparing for a biological attack on America. They're laying in supplies and underground shelters for people like Dick Cheney, but they're not telling the American people, and I wonder why that is. I believe, of course, Iran has played a very important part in this whole thing. I believe Saudi Arabia has played a very important part. We know, for instance, that the Bush administration is doing everything they can to prevent the lawsuits that have been brought against the Saudis by the families of the victims of 9/11. And, of course, if you have these lawsuits where you'd have depositions, you'd have evidence brought out, people forced to swear under oath, and, of course, the Bush administration is protecting the Saudis who've been financing this whole movement since its inception. And the question is why. There's much here that needs to be clarified. And, of course, we only ask you to get the facts. Like, go to my website and pull down my various articles, starting with September of last year. And then, of course, I think this September, October, November, December, January. And then, of course, my September and October newsletters this year really will give you an excellent oversight into what's going on behind the scenes. And then, of course, this is the time when we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for our listeners, to pray for certainly for the leaders of this country, for our ministers. We ask you also to pray for Radio Liberty, for my ministry, for our provision and our protection. And so until next, well, tomorrow, when we'll be back with you at the same time, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.